Blog Talk Radio.
All right, ladies, buckle up. It's showtime.
Have you lost your mind? I mean, how is it that you can disrespect a man's ethnicity when you know we've influenced nearly every facet of white America, from our music to our style of dress, not to mention your basic imitation of our sense of cool, walk, talk, dress, mannerisms? We enrich your very existence, all the while contributing to the gross national product through our achievements in corporate America. It's these conceits that comfort me when I'm faced with the ignorant, cowardly, bitter, and bigoted who have no talent, no guts. People like you who desecrate things they don't understand, when the truth is you should say, "Thank you, man," and go on about your way. But apparently, you're incapable of doing that. So, and don't tell me to be cool. I am cool! Racial epithets. Why does it always come down to that, huh?
It's a sad day today. It's Reese on the radio right here on blogtalkradio.com. 1 minute after the hour on this, Derek the Bounty Hunter's birthday, August the 20th, 2012. Where do I begin? I usually like to start off with something pretty intense. It has to do with a particular story, whatever it is. I'm going to wait until later. I'm probably going to do it in the next half hour. Because I woke up this morning to something I was completely shocked at. And I hate it when stuff like this happens. It's almost like when I have an extreme anger or hatred for something or someone, then they turn up dead. Now, you might be asking yourself, well, Reese, you need to apply that to some other people. Well, I'm sorry, folks. I just can't do it. But there's a reason why I'm bringing this up. Okay, feel me out here, okay? You have to feel me out on this, okay? Reese knows what he's talking about. Some people don't believe that I do, but I always end up right. So, okay. JC will probably vouch for this better than anybody, okay? This is an issue that I had way back around 2004. I even want to go so far as saying maybe even 2000. No, in fact, I'll go further. It was about 2002. I'm a movie maniac. I'm a movie buff. I love movies. I love films. I love directors. I love actors. I like their craft. I love what it is they do. I may not like the actor in general, but I love the craft. Hear me out when I'm saying this. So in 2002, I got a chance to sit down with John Leguizamo. John Leguizamo, of course, of Freak, The Pest, he's Broadway plays and Broadway one-man shows. He's appeared in a few films you all know. So I got John Leguizamo right next to me, and he's sitting, and we're doing a break on Star and Buck Wild. I'm almost certain this was during the Aaliyah suspension when he came on the show. Probably 2001, 2002. Nonetheless, but anyway, he's on the show. And during the break, I talked to John Leguizamo, who was there, and we started talking about this movie that he had done with Wesley Snipes called The Fan. Now, you know he's worked with Wesley Snipes and Tu Wong Fu as well. But this movie, The Fan, that he had done, directed by Tony Scott, the brother of Ridley Scott. And so I went to John Leguizamo and I said, look, do you follow this guy Tony Scott's career? He goes, yeah, I know the guy. I said, do you ever notice that every time he does a film, he has this signature scene where he puts rain in a scene where it absolutely makes no sense? And he goes, well, I'm not sure if I follow. I said, well, come on, you were in The Fan. The final climactic scene in The Fan is Robert De Niro on the pitcher's mound, about to pitch the knife to to Wesley Snipes. You know, Wesley Snipes is trying to find out where his son is, and if he doesn't hit this home run, you know, he's going to, you know, exactly. You know the whole deal. Anyway, but this big torrential rain scene is absolutely ridiculous. There's no way that a game would still be going on in this rain sequence. John Leguizamo looks over at me and he goes, you know, that was the biggest complaint on the whole set? Everybody was complaining. It's like, it's not realistic. We would never, ever allow it to go this far. I understand that you use rain for the effect, but this was just too much rain. We were all complaining about that. And I have been vindicated. Because I have been ripping this guy, Tony Scott, for years about this. And here, all of this time, I can mention all the movies. There's this one scene, Man on Fire. Denzel Washington's on the phone with Christopher Walken in the film. And Denzel Washington is outside in the backyard talking on his cell phone in the rain. Couldn't happen. Impossible. But he's always got to put rain in these silly sequences. Okay? Enemy of the State. Last scene of the film. Last scene of the film in Enemy of the State, right before the big shootout inside the mob headquarters. What happens? It's a big torrential rain sequence. Okay? Opening scene of The Last Boy Scout. Also directed by Tony Scott, starring Damon Wayans and Bruce Willis. Opening scene of the film, football game, torrential rain. It doesn't matter. You pick a movie that this guy has done, and there's torrential rain in it, or rain of some sort, and I can't seem to figure out why. Now, I have always said, I hate this guy. I hate this guy. I can't stand him. Because there's crap he does in these movies. The only movie he ever did that I loved, we had no torrential rain sequence, is True Romance. Starring Kristen Slater and Bridget Fonda. And a host of other people in that movie. Christopher Walken, Dennis Hopper, you know, almost everybody's in that movie. But nonetheless, that's the only movie he's ever done that I liked. But I've always expressed my hate for this director. Now, the reason why I bring this up is because back in 1996-97, I had gotten an advanced listen to Biggie Smalls' Life After Death album. I listened to the album, and I crapped on that album. I said, this is crap. I hate it. It sucks. It's the worst album ever. I can't believe he would come from Ready to Die to Life After Death and put out this garbage. Son of a bitch died the next day. Tupac, somebody's outside listening to some god-awful album by him out in Washington Square Park. These guys are trying to listen to this album. I can't believe it. It's the East Coast-West Coast War, and these guys are listening to Tupac Shakur on the East Coast in New York. I'm ripping that album apart. This is garbage. This is trash. How could you listen to this? Dear Mama turns into Brenda Had a Baby, and Brenda Had a Baby turns around to I Get Around, and I Got Hoes and all this other stuff, but yet Brenda got a baby, and Dear Mama. I'm railing against this guy. Next day, shot. Now, I've been railing against Tony Scott for all of this time. I've been saying how much I can't stand the way he films. And the son of a bitch dies this yesterday. Well, he killed himself. He took his own life, for crying out loud. He jumps off a bridge. Now, look, I'm not going to lie. I probably would have been one of those guys when I watched one of his films, walked out and was disgusted and go, Tony Scott, jump off a bridge. I used to say, John Singleton, your directing is so horrible, you shouldn't even be able to hold a disposable camera. But the bottom line is that here it is, I ripped on this guy over and over and over and over again, and then he kills himself. Before you get in here, James, wait. Just wait. The bottom line I'm trying to say here is that Tony Scott has now made it difficult for me to ever, ever rag on one of his films again. Okay? Now, I'm sorry that he's died. And from reports, they believe he had an inoperable brain tumor or of some sort, or brain cancer of some sort, from the reports that I'm hearing. And that's sad. But he's made it difficult for me to rip him for at least a couple of months until it's okay to talk about him in a bad way. Now, I'm mad because, Tony Scott, you took that away from me. and I'm not happy about it. You should not be taking my ability to rip you to shreds for the next film you put out. Now, there are only two of your films that I can honestly say I like. And that was what was the darn name of the movie I just said? True Romance. Just like Bridget Fonda. And Beverly Hills Cop 2. Now, I'm not saying Beverly Hills Cop 2 was better than Beverly Hills Cop, but we're talking about his films. So I like those two. Everything else, it sucked. So I don't know whether or not I've lost the film legend or I don't have to deal with another stupid rain sequence in a position in a scenario that probably wouldn't exist ever. That's all I'm trying to say here. I'm literally confused. Okay? I'm in a very, very weird place today. And it's because of Tony Scott. That's pretty much it. Okay, James, now you can jump in. You think I'm out of my mind now? Well, what? No response now? Let me put it back in. Okay, go ahead. Your response is right now.
Whoa, what is all that?
I don't know. What's your response now?
My response is I would call you a jinx, but you've been ripping on me for years, and I'm still around. So, and again, I haven't made movies. So,
well, you've never done anything that I vehemently hated, James. You've done things that have upset me and disappointed me, or maybe I didn't agree with, but you never did anything that made me hate. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, Tupac has. Biggie has. Tony Scott has. So I'm feeling bad about this hate that I have now, because now I'm feeling as if my
And you have nowhere to place it?
Yes, there you go. Now I've got no place to place it. I don't have a new thing to hate. They're taking away my ability to hate.
Wow. I feel so sorry for you.
Okay, well, my question is this.
Yes.
Do we know what the weather was like when he jumped?
It was probably raining.
Was it raining?
Because he seemed like the type that would end his life.
Wait a minute. Well, he did jump off a bridge, so there was water involved.
Exactly. Exactly.
But was it raining?
Hit the water, I'm sure it seemed like it was rain. Then he hit the water.
Here's the interesting part, okay? Now, those are three movies some of the movies that I've named, at least the movies that I like. Okay, so they're somewhat popular, at least Beverly Hills Cop 2. But we'll talk about this, okay? This guy was no slouch in Hollywood. He directed Top Gun, Days of Thunder. This guy directed big
movies. Okay, wait a minute. You hated Top Gun?
Top Gun is a cult movie. It's not a great movie. It's a popcorn film. It's not a great
popcorn
film.
Popcorn love.
It's a popcorn film. You know it is. It's got Tom Cruise and Val Kilmer, for crying out loud. Meg Ryan is the love interest, for crying out loud, who loses her husband. All right? Kelly McGillis is in that film. That was the last, well, not the last big film she did. She did Accused as well, because she got nominated for Best Supporting Actress in that. But Kelly McGillis was in that, and now she's a lesbian. So there's nothing else I can say about that. But anyway, my point is that Top Gun, big film for him. Days of Thunder, big film for him. Beverly Hills Cop, big film for him. Okay, he's done some big movies. But my point is, with all of that, with all of those accolades, with the fact that this guy is popular, and he's a brother of Ridley Scott, you know, Aliens, okay? Mm-hmm. Brother of Ridley Scott. The report read, I kid you not, he was driving down the highway up to the bridge. He pulled over his black Prius.
You're breaking up.
I said, what is he doing in a Prius? A Toyota Prius.
Obviously, he was already depressed.
I would be too. he was some green energy nut? Probably.
No, probably he had, you know, he didn't want to take out all his other cars. You know, he knew he was going to kill himself. So why do it in a more expensive car? It's a Prius. He's not going to miss it.
You're a Hollywood heavyweight, man. You go out like James Dean. You know, die young, leave a beautiful corpse.
Yeah. I don't know. He's a Hollywood heavyweight, and he had to go out in the first place. It was just, and you said he had a brain tumor?
Yeah, they believe that he had some sort of cancer or inoperable cancer in his brain. At least that's what the reports. They say he left a suicide note. Whether or not we'll ever see it, I don't know. But it'd be interesting to find out why he did it. I mean, again, this guy, you know, it wasn't like he was a struggling, you know, again, he had a beautiful wife, young children. His children are not old. His children are young. It just didn't make any sense to me.
Well, I mean, it sort of makes a weird sort of sense to me because, as you said, he's living the life that would anyone would think is charmed.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, with all his accolades, with all the money, with all the other bright spots in his life, he develops a brain tumor that's inoperable. I mean, and there's nothing he can do about it.
Yeah,
that's
Mike just sent
anybody.
Mike just sent me a tweet. You are absolutely right, Mike. I blew that one. It is Patricia Arquette. She was in the TV show. Patricia Arquette. Yeah, I don't know why I said Bridget Fonda. You're absolutely right, Mike. I blew that one. He also says lots of Hollywood types drive a Prius. DiCaprio even quit hating. But we know DiCaprio is a big green freak, for crying out loud. A director should never, ever drive in something like that. You're big-time director. Yeah, Patricia Arquette, I apologize for that. That's right. I should know better than that.
I thought that was wrong when you said...
Well, correct me then. If I get it wrong, I get it wrong.
Well, I couldn't remember her name, but I knew it wasn't Bridget Fonda.
I don't know why I said Bridget Fonda. Why I was confusing her? I'm thinking about that stupid movie Singles. Don't ask me why I know that film. Never ask me. Okay? It was date night. It was a long time ago. That's the best I can give you. But, yeah, Man on Fire, I can't believe Mike says he liked that movie.
I like that movie.
What? Really?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
I think people went too far with this whole idea of getting Denzel Washington playing a mean killer type. You know, the shoot 'em ups, the bang bang. People went a little nuts with that idea.
I don't know. I mean, was it? It came after. Was it after or before?
Training Day.
Excuse me.
Training Day.
Yeah.
That's a great question because I know Training Day was in the early aughts, in the early 2000s. That I'm positive.
Right. And before that, you know, before that, Denzel Washington almost never played a bad guy.
I don't remember one movie where he played a bad guy before then. I mean, I know
right.
that, well, in essence, Man on Fire is really, he doesn't play a bad guy.
No, he's not a bad guy, but he's sort of an anti-hero or a damaged, yeah. I mean, because the fact is, the backstory, before he met the little girl and before, you know, why he devolved into alcoholism is because he was doing something with the government. He was a killer.
Right.
You know, he was
right.
a killer.
Right, right. He was
and,
a killer with a heart of gold.
Are we talking about Denzel?
Yes.
He was a bad guy in Soldier Story.
Was he a bad guy there?
No, he wasn't a bad guy. He wasn't
he
the bad guy.
He was the one who killed Adolf Caesar.
But you still couldn't really call him the bad guy. I mean, he was just, you know, again, he was a tortured soul. He was fighting for his country. And, you know, he was still being treated as if he was second class while, you know, he was dying for his country.
he still killed a senior officer and was trying to get away with it. That's not a bad guy. I don't know what it is.
I have to agree there.
Oh, wait, soldier story. I'm sorry. I'm getting soldier stories mixed up with glory.
Yeah, glory. I don't know what that's. I don't know what would confuse the two.
There was soldier story with Adolf Caesar, David Alan Greer. I think we played a clip from it. He was talking to CJ, one of the characters in the movie, and he was talking about Nigga, yes, from Boston, and the one that got it, the run around on the table.
You know the damage one ignorant Negro can do.
That's it.
We were in France in the First War. We had won decorations. But the white boys had told all them French gals that we had tails. Then they found this ignorant colored soldier. Paid him to tie a tail to his ass and run around half naked making monkey sounds. They put him on a big round table in the Cafe Napoleon. Put a reed in his hand, crown on his head, blanket on his shoulders, and made him eat bananas in front of all them Frenchies.
I love Adolf Caesar.
Yeah, he's, man, a man who could eat up a scene with just his voice. I mean, he can make anything sound good.
Yeah. Well, okay. Well, unfortunately, Tony Scott, taking away my ability to hate for a couple of months on any film that he makes. So hopefully, I know what's going to happen.
Hey.
One of these movie channels are going to play all of his films, dedicate this whole thing to him. I'm probably going to watch them. I know I will, so I can rip them apart even more in my mind. I won't say anything publicly.
Yes, you will.
Hey, listen, if it'll make your day.
What's that?
Looking at the radar map from California, Los Angeles, where he killed himself.
Yeah.
There are storms today all around Vegas and Flagstaff, which would have been Los Angeles weather yesterday. there's a very good chance he might have lost himself during a storm.
More rain. See, now you can call him an actual. Maybe it's prophetic.
Yeah, maybe it is. Maybe it is. Edward in Connecticut, how are you?
I'm good, man. How you doing?
I'm pretty good, man.
Man, I cannot believe you don't like Top Gun. I'm just shocked.
It's a popcorn movie. It's a popcorn film. There's nothing about that movie that I like. Especially that you lost that love and feeling scene. I hate that scene. You know, Tom Cruise, Val Kilmer, and the boys playing volleyball with their shirts off. Hate that scene. You know, I'll admit, and even Tony Scott admits that the airplane sequences in the film complete ripoff from Star Wars.
But even so, when is the last time a movie has made you feel proud to be an American?
I don't know.
He never feels proud to be an American.
Flight 93.
Yeah, Flight 93. That's a movie. I look at Top Gun. It's not a movie that's about patriotism. It's about this hot dog pilot who thinks he's better than everybody else in the world. It's a popcorn film. I know a lot of people like it. I don't want to crap on it. I know people like it. It's just not one of my favorite films. True Romance will always be my favorite film of all time by the guy. And Beverly Hills Cop 2, I enjoyed immensely. But all the rest of those, not a fan. I don't think you can find one movie that this guy...
True Romance wasn't a popcorn movie?
No, True Romance was a great film. In and of itself, because of the performances by alone, Christopher Walken, Dennis Hopper,
that great
monologue between the both of them, all of the action.
But it's still a popcorn movie. It had nothing to do with anything. It was gratuitous violence. It was nothing more than a popcorn movie.
I don't know, it was
just done better by the actors.
It was just an exciting film from start to finish.
Hey, was it popcorn? Did it have violence and lovemaking?
No. It had probably about two lovemaking scenes that were brief, and the rest of it was just hardcore violence. Come on.
Gratuitous violence. So, again, a popcorn movie that was carried more by the actors.
Oh, that makes it a white movie. Version. That would make it a white version of What's Love Got to Do With It, then.
Well, I don't think it would go that far. Let's take one more call before we go to break. Oh, my bad. Yes, it is.
Actually, I would say True Romance, Pulp Fiction, Reservoir Dogs, something in that thing.
Well, let's put it this way. Quentin Tarantino was, JC's going to have to check this one out. Edward, do you know this or not? Someone very famous wrote the screenplay to True Romance, and I want to say it's Quentin Tarantino or Oliver Stone, but I could be wrong either way. Dude.
Yeah, Quentin Tarantino had something to do with True Romance. I can't remember what it was, but he did have a hand in that.
I'm almost certain as well that he did. But I'm just, you know, again, I am not happy about his death, and if he was really, really suffering from an inoperable brain tumor or brain cancer or whatever it was, I can understand his pain, but, you know, he probably didn't want to have to suffer through that. Again, it bothers me to some degree. Look, I know a lot of people
are going to... Hey, Reese.
Pressure.
Reese, you're absolutely right. Quentin Tarantino was one of the writers of True Romance.
Yes, I just looked it up. I knew it. But... I know
and thank you,
JD,
for coming up with the connection.
You did. I'm going to say that. Most people are going to say that we lost a screen legend. That's probably true in some circles. But, again, not a huge fan of the guy. That's just me. Just me.
Well, you have to look at it like, you know, Top Gun was that the most famous movie?
That would probably be his most famous film. Yeah, he will. We'll be beyond a shadow of a doubt. We'll take a break when we come back. Before we go, I'm sorry. Let me just say this. A true legend in her own right, 95 years old, died today in her sleep. Reports say she died with a smile on her face. And I have to admit, I love the old school comedians. Henny Youngman, Bob Hope, Dean Martin, of course, Jerry Lewis. But Phyllis Diller has passed away today at the age of 95. And she was a true legend in my book, one of the very few female comedians that I adore. Because I got to be honest with you guys, I'm going to sound a little sexist here. I don't like chicks doing comedy. I don't. I don't think there's a chick out there today that I really, really like that does comedy.
You don't
very
like
few.
Amy
Schumer's all right, but I don't like a lot of chicks who do comedy. But I love Phyllis Diller. And
I would put her in a boat with Joan Rivers.
Maybe Joan Rivers, yeah. One of the few. I like Joan Rivers. Very, very
good.
Joan is good. But I just want to send at least a special fare thee well to Phyllis Diller. Rest in peace, my dear. I'll always be a true fan. Anyway, we'll go to a break. When we come back, we'll talk about some more. President Barack Obama comes out of the shadows and does a press conference. We'll return. It's Reese on the Radio.
So, Biden says they're going to put y'all back in chains. And when he gets called out for it, we Republicans get accused of taking what he said out of context. It's always us taking y'all out of context. It's always you're so misunderstood. And y'all are getting more indignant by the day as we Republicans expose you for how cynical, hateful, greedy, covetous, racist, and just straight up nuttier than a jar of Skippy you Democrats actually are.
I think what's happening.
Propaganda. We'll be right back.
I like to point to about how Democrats are always making excuses is Bill Clinton at Robert Byrd's memorial. Bill Clinton tries to make light of Democrat Senator Robert Byrd being in the KKK and tries to sell us on overlooking the racist position he ran on by saying, give him a break. He was just trying to get elected. You're exactly right, Bill. That was key for Democrats. And a big reason why they got elected was because they were trusted to represent the racist sentiments of their constituency. This is at the core of the Democrat Party. People didn't vote for Republicans for this. They voted Democrat. But the Republican Party is the party of racists. Based on what? Barry Goldwater? Lee Atwater? Strom Thurmond? Did I miss anybody? I'm sure you liberals got a few cherry-picked figures for your talking points. But while you try to recite these names, keep in mind the words of your Democrat darling, Bill Clinton. Robert Byrd was just trying to get elected. That's pretty much the way it was for Democrats. Period. The hotbeds of bigotry in America are commonly recognized as the southern states, right? And keep in mind, the people are going to vote for those who represent their racist values. And we've already agreed that the southern states have been the hottest for bigotry, right? Well, that list of so-called racist Republicans that liberals try to bring up is as insignificant as the last sheet of tissue on a toilet paper roll after Michael Moore binges on buffalo wings. Let's look at these racist states, shall we? Texas. Oh, yeah. Whole lot of racist rednecks down there. And, of course, they're going to want people in office who represent their white supremacist culture, right? That's why out of 47 governors, 38 of them have been Democrats and only 7 have been Republican. Oh, but years of Democrat racist representation is nothing compared to the strategies of Bush Sr.'s campaign manager Lee Atwater. But hold on. That's just one of those ultra-racist states. Alabama had 53 governors. 42 have been Democrats. Only 6 chosen by the people of that state were Republican. But you want to hold Republicans responsible for racism. Okay. The racist Democrat representation continues with Mississippi. Ooh-wee, that's a barroom hoedown of bigotry right there. They've had 64 governors in that state. 52 have been Democrats, and only 6 have been Republicans. Yeah, but Strom Thurmond, shut up. What about Democrat segregationist Lester Maddox? And for every so-called racist Republican you liberals try to point to, there's like 10 Democrat actual racists. But y'all still really want to believe that racism is the fault of Republicans that badly, huh? Despite these figures? Okay, let's continue. And I'm not even talking about congressmen and senators and mayors and such. That would take too long. But yes, the majority of them were Democrats too. Georgia has had 82 governors. 47 were Democrats. Only 4 were Republicans. Louisiana, a lot of racism there. 53 governors. 30 were Democrats. 11 have been Republicans. Arkansas, 45 governors, 8 Republicans, the rest were Democrats. Tennessee, 58 governors, 10 Republicans, 34 of them were Democrats. South Carolina, 116 governors, 8 of them Republicans, 90 of them were Democrats. Do I really need to go through all these states where racism was the hottest? I thought you were Democrats. Isn't it the majority rules in your party? Well, the majority of your party's history is racist, yet because of minority instances of arguable racism in the Republican Party, the minority ruling is that the Republicans are racist? See how contradictory y'all are? Are you understanding that the racist population of these states that are commonly known as the most racist states of the United States elected people who represented their racist values, and the people representing their racist values were Democrats? You can't lay the blame on Republicans when it was Democrats controlling these states. The Democrat Party platform is rooted in racism. Have you ever read the original Democrat Party platform? The original included language to protect their so-called right to force people into slavery. But Republicans are the racists because the original Republican Party platform was to abolish slavery? And when liberals are reminded of this, they always say the same thing. Yeah, well, you know what, Zoe? That was a long time ago, and you need to get over it. Really? Okay, well, you know what? Slavery itself was a long time ago. Why don't y'all get over that? Marinate on that a bit while we pick this up on the next donation. Straight up nuttier than a jar of Skippy. You.
25 minutes after the hour right here on Blog Talk Radio. It is Reese on the Radio on this August the 20th, 2012. Again, happy birthday to Derek the Bounty Hunter, who I believe turns 41 today. Shouting out his age and everything.
Hey, Bunny Williams' birthday.
I'm not sure. Anyway, before I get into this story about Barack Obama finally coming out of the shadows to meet with the press corps today, after 8 weeks of not taking any questions, there's been a lot of talk about a term used by Republican representative running for Congress, Todd Akin. Now, if you haven't heard this story, let me get you up to speed. He's running for the Senate seat in Missouri. In a local interview, he was asked about his stance on pro-life. And in his question, or in the question he was asked about, in cases of rape and incest, would he allow abortion then? Now, this, let me tell you, folks, is always a setup question for Republicans. It is always a setup question for the GOP. Because, of course, liberal media believes that, you know, freedom of choice, which only means that choice should be abortion. So Todd Akin responded to that and probably didn't know it was coming and was answering on the fly. And the question went like this, and he gives his answer, and I'll let you hear it for yourself.
Okay, so if an abortion could be considered in a case of, say, a tubal pregnancy or something like that, what about in the case of rape? Should it be legal or not?
Well, you know, people always want to try and make that as one of those things. Well, how do you slice this particularly tough sort of ethical question? It seems to me, first of all, from what I understand from doctors, that's really rare. If it's a legitimate rape, the female body has ways to try to shut that whole thing down. But let's assume that maybe that didn't work or something. You know, I think there should be some punishment, but the punishment ought to be on the rapist and not attacking.
So he used the term legitimate rape. In essence, everyone is jumping right on top of this as saying that asking, in essence, is there a difference? Legitimate rape versus forcible rape, rape is rape. That's the big argument everybody's having right now. And they're asking for Todd Akin to step out of the race, even though he has a good chance of beating Claire McCaskill. Take over that seat and give it to Republicans, so the Republicans have a good chance of taking over the Senate. So because that he used this phrase, legitimate rape, in cases of legitimate rape, mistake? Absolutely. Using the term legitimate and applying it to the word rape is asinine. As we all know, rape is rape, bottom line. But see, then I have a problem on the other side of this. Because if you ask anybody in the liberal media, they always use the term forcible rape, as if to suggest that there is a different kind. I mean, what's the opposite? What's the antithesis of forcible? Consensual? Which, again, I would throw this back in anybody's face and say, when you ask someone that question, what are you thinking? The bigger question I always ask behind this, and that's an argument for later, and I might bring it up in a second, but the argument is here, and this is why I have such issues with this word when it applies to abortion, rape or incest when it involves abortion. My biggest argument is, why do people always bring up abortion as a means to argue, rape as a means to argue abortion? As if to say that there is a proponent, there is an extreme amount of pregnancies that happen in the result of. But yet no one seems to counter this question by giving facts or numbers. Now I'm going to go out on a limb here. And I'm going to see whether or not there are any stats that support this. So, JC, I'm going to ask, Edward, if you feel like doing this, please, because, Edward, you do great research, too, and I know Mike in Florida, forget about it. You know, you guys are the creme de la creme when it comes to this stuff. But I don't know of any statistics that break down pregnancies due to rape or incest and in what numbers they come or what numbers. Look, it will take, what, 10 million abortions since 1973? Or, I mean, I'm sure the number's higher than that, but I believe it's around 10 million. In that number, in and of itself, what's the percentage of abortions that came as a result of incest or rape? That, I believe, is a valuable question. Because this is one of those third rail issues for people in the GOP or people who are pro-life. No one ever argues it. No one ever talks about it. No one ever counters the claim. They always want to ask, well, you know, they always want to bring that crime element into it. You know, well, if a crime happens, shouldn't this unlawful act be allowed? It's like, oh, shouldn't we kill a baby if it's a result of these? In essence, saying that the life is somewhat disposable because of the scenario in which it happened. But I would say, okay, fine, you've got a legitimate argument if out of 10 million of those rapes, pardon me, 10 million of those abortions, out of 10 million of those abortions, if you were to suggest to me 40% of them were a result of incest and rape, if you were to say 30%, if you were to say a third, then I'd say you have a fair argument. Yeah, 3.5 million? Yeah, I'd go there. All right, you know what? I'm going to say, yes, in those situations, fine. You got a fair argument. You know, I'll back off on my pro-life stance. But I've never heard anyone counter it with those numbers. And I don't know whether or not those statistics are even held. Why isn't
that?
So, say again, Mary?
Of course they are.
I'm sure they are. All right, so JC, do you have numbers or anything that...
Well, let me go ahead and quote my source first.
Okay.
It's from the U.S. National Library of Medicine and National Institutes of Health. It's NLM.NIH.gov. It's a government website.
Mm-hmm.
The objective was to attempt to determine the national rape-related pregnancy rate and provide descriptive characteristics of pregnancies that result from that rape.
Okay.
The study was a national probability sample of 4,008 adult American women who took part in a three-year longitudinal survey that assessed the prevalence of incidents of rape and related physical and mental health outcomes. The
okay.
result, the national rape-related pregnancy rate is 5.0 per rape amongst victims of reproductive age 12 to 45. Among women, an estimated 32,101 pregnancies resulted from rape each year.
Okay. And give me that last number again.
32,101.
Okay, so 32,000 is in
right.
essence, that's the number they're giving per year.
Right. That's not 5% of that's 5% of most rapes, of rapes. And that's of women of reproductive age 12 to 45.
Okay. Edward, were you able to find anything remotely close to this or another source, or did you find the same source?
I found a couple of sources.
Okay.
I haven't actually been able to go to the actual source, but
okay.
so far I found a New York Times article, and it says that in a 1987 survey, it was about 1% of all abortions that were due to rape or incest. And also, I found another website. In 2000, they did a survey, also 1% of all abortions.
Okay.
Now,
1% would equal, I mean, I think the number of abortions have now in 10 years have come up to where? We're talking 10 million?
Mm-hmm. Oh, and I also just found another one in 2004. Also, 1% was a victim of rape.
Okay.
So three surveys I've found so far have all had the number, the percentage at 1%.
Right. So we're talking about a range of over 25 years.
Yeah.
Okay. So a range of over 25 years, the percentage has not jumped.
Not at all that I can find so far.
Okay, so it's all stayed the same. Now, to make a national argument about abortion in the cases of rape and incest, then you would be saying, now, first of all, this would put, this number in and of itself would put Planned Parenthood out of business. If you were to make that argument, okay? If Planned Parenthood were strictly here to say, look, we want to provide abortions for people who need them, and if the argument back to the GOP is say, hey, listen, we'll give you some leeway here. We want you to allow abortions, especially in cases of rape and incest. And then we'd make the argument and say, okay, fine, that's 1% of the people who are getting abortions. And so what would the left say about that? What would Planned Parenthood say about that? We can't operate with those numbers.
Oh, I have a lot of liberal friends, and the first thing they would say is that the numbers of rape are underreported. So there's a higher percentage of rape and incest that goes on that are claimed as other things. That's exactly what they would say. I've had this argument with many, many liberals.
Of course they make a blanket statement like that, Edward. It's ridiculous. This is, you know, it's another classic case of I don't have to prove it, but I'll say that it's a fact. By saying there's a lot of them that go out there unreported. Well, where's your, if it's unreported, what makes it fact? You know, if it wasn't reported today that I drove around all through the Virginia area without a license today, but there's no proof of it, unless you ask a couple of my close friends and family, they wouldn't know, but it's unreported. Can a police sit up here and say that there are hundreds of people driving around without a license, without a fact, or do you only make... You only make a fact based on its numbers, based on what is a true statistic, not on some fly-by-night estimation by saying, I bet you there's a lot of people out there that don't report it. So we're going to now institute abortion because of people out there who might not report it or haven't? It sounds ridiculous to me. Now, I got to go extremely to the left here and go to James. James, you were off for a second, but J.C. found an independent... JC found an independent study. Edward went out and found an independent study that flat out said that pregnancies or abortions that were a result of a rape or incest only made 1%. And if 10 million abortions have taken place since 1973 till today, 1% every year, 1% every year. The numbers never change. Edward found a report in 1980. What was it, 87?
87.
Okay, for 87... 2000 and 2004, the number stayed the same, 1%. So the argument is that Republicans should allow abortions in the case of rape and incest, and the argument should be back to them, well, that number only turns out to be 1% of the people who are having abortions. Should we still have it to be legal because of that?
Okay. What I'm saying is, you know, I'm not going to go with the blanket statement, but even if it is just the 1%, all right, you are still condemning that 1% to constantly relive something that's traumatic with a blanket law that, you know, doesn't make any room for them.
Okay, well, all right. Well, I understand where it is that what you're saying here, but let me get a little bit of clarity, okay? So the question that I'm asking is that if Roe v. Wade were to be overturned, but a stipulation in the law says there will be no more abortions, but in the cases of rape and incest, you can have an abortion by law, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that number is only 1% every year. Now, we're talking about if we were to break down that number, let's say 1973 – until today works out 40 years, right? 40 years, 10 million abortions. Okay? That works out to be, wow, what? We're talking a quarter of a million abortions a year? Maybe a little over 300,000 a year? Right? We're looking at that number. 1% of 300,000. 1%. Planned Parenthood couldn't survive with those kind of numbers because that's the service that Planned Parenthood gives. Well, maybe the argument is
Planned Parenthood gets.
Yeah, that's yeah, exactly. That's the if you don't think that Planned Parenthood is a business of abortions, come on, it's an abortion business.
I will disagree with that, but you know what? Okay.
But well, how else do they make their money? They get government funding at $500,000 a year, $500,000 a year, to provide health services, so they claim, you know, and prenatal care. But they charge for abortions. How do they keep the doors open?
Well, obviously, if they're getting hundreds of thousands of dollars a year.
We're talking about Planned Parenthood is one entity, but they have shops all across the country. They get $500 million from the United States government. They've got to spread that around to every one of their sites. So they're spreading that around. They got to pay for administrative costs and all that other stuff. But how else are they making their money?
Again, through one little aspect of it. It's not just the whole. It's not their whole business at all.
They get their money from abortions at $300 to $500 a pop. They get their money through abortions. They're an abortion mill. They're literally a factory, for crying out loud.
The fact of the matter is, you're still taking people out of the equation, all right? Whether they make their money off of abortion and whether there are still people... Go ahead.
No, I'm listening. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you. I wasn't cutting you off. Go ahead.
All right. Okay, you're still taking people out of that equation, all right? Yes, you're going to find people who are using it as sort of a contraceptive, all right, or an alternative to contraceptive. However, all right, that's the individual's way of doing things or choice.
Right.
Now,
I understand that you're talking about choice here, and I'll make this argument, and then you can proceed, but I'll make this argument. Do you know if you talk to anyone out there who's having unprotected sex or having unplanned pregnancies, if you pose this question to them, the response is exactly the same every time I ask, at least. If there was no abortion, if abortion was illegal and could not happen, do you think that you would probably take better precautions when you were having sex or intercourse or whatever it was? Every person I ask goes, couldn't get an abortion. I said, she couldn't get an abortion? I said, yeah, you have no means of getting an abortion. Would this cause you to take precautions the next time you slept with a girl or you were, and they all say the same thing?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Of course you're going to say that. Of course they're going to say that when they have time to think. All right? When they have time to think about it. But if you look at the numbers, most of that's why it's called an unplanned pregnancy. Nobody plans.
No. You would plan for it. You would be forced. You would be forced to. You'd be forced to take responsibility for your actions when you get into that bedroom or the alleyway, whatever you prefer.
There's no way.
But see, the thing is, man, no, I still don't think so. Because when it comes time for that, when it comes down to 0 hour.
Go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead. Well, every time I try to talk.
No. I wasn't cutting you off. That was. I swear to God, I didn't cut you off. I was listening.
Oh, well, then I don't know. I keep hearing something, so maybe it's just an echo or something.
Yeah, it's just an echo. I apologize.
Okay. But when it comes down to 0 hour, no one really thinks about it, all right? All you're thinking about is, hey, this chick is hot, or even if she isn't, she's willing, I'm horny.
Okay.
And then... No one takes the repercussions or the future into account at the present.
Yes, but James, that's okay. Today,
that's the problem.
But James, today, yeah, exactly, Edward. That's the problem. Because of today's environment, because we know that abortion is legal, that we know that there is a means to an end. That if you get somebody pregnant and you can't
thinking
have
about
child,
that,
no,
I'm saying. You know what? It's still, no one really thinks about that. Okay? No
situation.
I don't believe that. Edward, go ahead. I don't believe that, but Edward, you go ahead.
I have to say from personal experience and knowing some guys, that's not true. Yeah, there are certain people who don't give a crap about having a child, but I'm someone who's 40 years old, and I think about this thing every time I was going to, you know, have the, you know, however you want to put it, so I don't, you know, ditch or no.
Right.
There are people in this country who do think before they, you know, do actions that make them, you know, conceive a child, you know.
Right.
But those who don't.
Right. And I misspoke, and I will apologize. I shouldn't have said no one. I shouldn't have said no one, and you're right. That takes people who are responsible out of the picture as well. I'm doing the same thing, and I shouldn't have. I apologize.
No, that's fine, James. I mean, it's a passionate subject matter. And I appreciate where you're coming from. I know you're looking at this from an aspect of people getting to the heat of the moment, you know, that, you know, their heart's racing, you know, their hormones are blazing, and they get in that situation and they make a mistake. I understand that. I'm not in no way am I discounting that. But what I'm saying is, if there's no advent of abortion, if there's no introduction to that whatsoever in our society, that there is a sort of a way out, a safety net, if you will, then people have a tendency to behave differently. You know, I always go back. I heard this great story about, or this great question was posed a couple of years ago that said, look, unemployment started 50 years ago. The unemployment rolls started 50 years ago. Doesn't anybody ever wonder, what did people do before unemployment? What did people do before welfare and Medicare? What did they do? So people act like these things, because they've been around for so long, that this is the way normal people behave. No. That's nothing more than what we call a societal norm. And that's where people grew up with abortion, so they think it's always been there. But there were people back in the days where, you know, I have some of my friends who've got large families. You know, I know one woman, she's got 11 brothers and sisters.
Again, you're forgetting why abortion and welfare and Medicare was put into place in the first place, okay? Before welfare, well, especially welfare and Medicare, all right? If you didn't have unemployment, then you either you went out and you found a job, or you became homeless.
All right.
There was a lot of people who were who wanted to work, couldn't, and they were, you know, falling by the wayside. Medicare. People were dying left and right.
Actually, no, James, they weren't.
That's not true at all.
James, they weren't. They weren't dying left and right. People made, you know, there was a stronger sense of community 50 years ago. When a family member was in trouble, people helped out. You know, I'll go back to 1948. You know, in 1948, in areas like Brighton Beach, families got together. But before 48, in fact, I want to say before 48, I want to go back to like at least 45, 46, there were people who were being kicked out of Germany, Jews kicked out of Germany, kicked out of Poland. These people were being kicked out of their country because they had to escape, of course, because of the war and Hitler and killing Jews. And the families in places like Brighton Beach, Brooklyn, in places like Bensonhurst, what did they do? They told the family, hey, uncle and aunt, you know, Yeshiva are coming in and they're going to live in our household. You know, we're going to have 14 people to a home. They all rallied together and they helped people out and they helped and they got them jobs. That was the societal norm then. With the advent of programs like abortion, we then give people an escape to what it is that they should be doing responsibly. And I'm telling you, I mean, I don't want to say that I'm telling you. I'm trying to at least try to have this discussion where I'm saying, look at the abortion on a level of, if it weren't there, don't you think it would force people to be more responsible when they acted in the areas of sex? It wouldn't be so fly by night.
And, And again, I have to say no, because it didn't happen before abortion. Before abortion was legal, abortions still happened. All right, it wasn't like it never happened before. It was just it got taken out of the alleyways or the back alley doctors who were performing abortions, and their patients were dying.
But James, it wasn't done at an alarming rate in the fashion that it's done today.
Yeah, in fact,
that's true. But
those people who advocated for abortion rights in this country used that whole midwife in an alleyway with a hanger, all that other crap, using that as a means to get it passed.
Stop calling it crap, because it's not like it didn't happen.
No, I'm not suggesting
it
didn't
happen.
Not like it's a myth. But they used it. No. They used it by saying that if you don't pass this law and make it a responsible way or an effective way for people to have legal
medically responsible.
A medically responsible abortion. If you don't do this, there are going to be people who can't afford it who are going to go in a back alleyway with a midwife and get a hanger in them and all this other stuff, and people are going to bleed out and die and all this stuff. It was a fear factor sort of element that was brought into the argument, which of course caused – I mean, if you really think about it, Roe v. Wade was a 5-4 decision. You have to think about that. And today, this country is ardently opposed to abortion. 2% of people who are opposed to abortion today, because they believe that the practice in and of itself has gotten out of hand.
Well, that I'll agree with. It has gotten out of hand. All right? And I, you know what, and far be it from me to ever say it hasn't. Okay? However, I think what's more out of hand, because if you get it, if you go away with it, especially now that it's been a part of the socially accepted norm, that if you take it away now, again, you're going to find people who, all right, it used to be, they're used to having it, now they don't, so, again, there's going to be a rise.
So what you're saying is you think that the people are so foolish that they wouldn't realize that they don't have access to legal abortions anymore. So they wouldn't just say, hey, I'm going to be responsible for myself and for my body, and I know I don't want to have anybody put a hanger up my crotch.
Yeah, I know.
And kill an unborn. Hey, you'd have to put up or shut up.
I wouldn't go
even
so far as to say foolish.
Even if the guys weren't as responsible, the girls would be.
I wouldn't go so far as to say foolish. What I'm saying is, in the heat of the moment, it's easier to forget.
No.
Blood is rushing everywhere but the brain.
Valid point, but I think that women would take the charge on this one. This is what I believe. Let's go to the top of the hour. We'll be back.
Feminism,
stick around.
But then it goes back to feminism, and you know.
I know.
But why should the woman be the responsible one?
Why shouldn't I be the responsible one? If I'm allowing you to enter one of my orifices.
Okay, never mind. This is getting
you are the responsible one in the first place.
I don't want to be responsible.
Because if you're not being raped, you got to say yes.
Hold on. We'll take a break. Obviously, this is a very heated conversation. Stick around. We'll be right back at 3CR Radio.
Here because I can't stand what's happening in this community.
Yes.
Yeah, and somebody has to make a change.
Yes.
Now, brother, will you help me?
Yes, I will.
I wish I could. Damn it, man. I heard the People's Revolutionary Army was once 1,000 strong. Now, what happened?
They got government jobs.
The brothers walked in with guns, came out with jobs. The brothers weren't mad anymore. Yes, Whitey is something else.
On the radio 5 minutes after the hour right here on blogtalkradio.com. It is August the 20th, 2012. I'd like to acknowledge a dear friend and my biggest enemy, Brenda. I know you're out there and I know you're listening. I just want to acknowledge you and show you some love. You guys don't know Brenda, but Brenda is my arch nemesis. Because every time we see each other, for some odd reason, we just tend to rag on each other. I barely know the woman, but every time I've seen her, she's ripped me apart, even punched me in the chest once. I don't know what it was about. You know, most people would equate that to being, you know, hey, you know, when a girl punches on you when you're a kid, that means that she likes you. No, 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 not this woman. Hates my guts, punched me right in my chest. I don't know where. And I got a bird chest. You know what I mean? I ain't got like, you know, I'm no hulking man, you know? This woman punched me and I felt the pain for about 3 days. I don't know what's wrong with her. I don't know why she hit me. I should call the authorities, but I don't know if I can do that now because it's so long. But hey, if my accuser can wait 3.5 years. Mike, I'm sorry, I'm kidding. Bottom line is, I'd like to acknowledge Brenda. Mwah! And Hunter and Tim as well. Anyway, we're having a heated discussion, folks, about the argument that was made with a gentleman by the name of Todd Akin. He is the representative running for the GOP Senate nomination in Missouri. He made a very off-color remark about rape, forcible rape, the argument about whether or not abortion should be legal for those who are victims of rape or incest. And I'll play the audio again and give you an opportunity to hear it.
Of the importance of all of us. Okay, so if an abortion could be considered in a case of, say, a tubal pregnancy or something like that, what about in the case of rape? Should it be legal or not? Well, you know, people always want to try and make that as one of those things. Well, how do you slice this particularly tough sort of ethical question? It seems to me, first of all, from what I understand from doctors, that's really rare. If it's a legitimate rape, the female body has ways to try to shut that whole thing down. But let's assume that maybe that didn't work or something. You know, I think there should be some punishment, but the punishment ought to be in the rapist and not attacking.
So he made an argument about whether or not the punishment should be on the rapist versus the punishment being on the life of a child. And because he used the term legitimate rape, as if to suggest that other, I don't know, it almost sounds like someone saying that he said that there is a different kind, as opposed to, in essence, we're saying if someone says that they're raped, then it has to be considered a legitimate rape in some sort of way. It's very, very convoluted in my view. I think they're really parsing words here in order to make an issue. Todd Akin has since apologized for using that statement. He's really, really sorry. I can't speak for him, but he sounds at least sincere. And he flat out apologized. Not like we can get that from Joe Biden, but I digress. But he apologized for it vehemently. He really, really feels sorry about it because this is a very, very tough issue. Not the abortion issue, the rape issue. It's a very important, and again, I've made this argument before. You know, when Sandra Bernhardt was in Washington, D.C. at some show that she was doing, filled with women, it was a women's only event, and in talking about Sarah Palin at that time running for vice president, was going to be visiting New York City and visiting the United Nations. And Sandra Bernhardt, famed comedian from the Roseanne show and others, friends with Madonna, says, when Sarah Palin visits New York, I hope that bitch gets raped by 5 black men. And I began my show back in I want to say September. I'm almost thinking it was September 19th. I said on the air, I opened the show. When is rape a joke? When is rape funny? And no one wanted to even touch the story in the mainstream media. Didn't think that it was not only horrible that here were, by the way, when she made the statement, all the women in the crowd cheered. Like, yeah, rape that bitch. Cheering in the crowd. Wishing the rape on another woman. Just because she was pro-life. And then beyond that, saying that she hopes she got raped by five black men, of course, to, hey, do I have to spell it out for you? Which makes it even more incendiary. So here's Todd Akin making this claim of legitimate rape, and everybody jumps on it. He knows he misspoke. It sounds like he misspoke. Using the word legitimate again. Picking apart every word that he says. But now the argument has come to, look, if the argument or the question is going to be, what about cases of rape and incest? The argument has to be brought to another level. And the next level is, what's the rate of abortions based upon rape and incest? And as we've just talked in the last hour, we got numbers. JC found independent numbers. Edward in Connecticut looked up independent numbers. And again, Edward, I appreciate you looking that up. The numbers turn out to be 1% a year. And this is going all the way back to 1987, 2000, and 2004. The number never changed. And we're looking at abortions per year at somewhere around 300,000, 350,000 a year. So, again, if that's the number, 1% every year, and we're looking at 350, the number, that's minuscule. And what would that do to places like Planned Parenthood? Now, James, his argument was, look, if you do that, it's going to harm people. It's going to hurt people in some sort of way. You know, what about those who, you know, who are driven by their loins and make a mistake? Well, James, to be honest with you, F them. You put an H on your chest and you handle it. That's what responsible people do. You make your bed, you lie in it. We cannot make provisions for people who make mistakes and just say, oh, they made a mistake. Let's. Even President Obama said, hey, you know, I don't want my daughter to live with a mistake. In essence, calling having a child a mistake. Or be burdened with a baby, which is what people on the left think of children. Burdens. Like it or not. That's what they do. So I'll bring Mike in, who's just joined us, and thank you for sticking around for a while. Mike, do you have an opinion on this yourself?
Man, I'm not pro-choice. I'm pro-abortion. I think abortion should be free. There should be mobile abortion trucks driving through the hood, the barrio, and Walmart parking lots, and they should make RU486 chewable and fruit-flavored so we can encourage people to take it.
You sound like Margaret Sanger.
When's the last time you drove to New York? How was the traffic?
Yeah, okay. I'm not going to disagree there. It's ridiculous. So
you want more people? You try to park at a sporting event lately? No, we have too many people
you're
anyway.
You're of the ilk that says that the world is overpopulated. Is that what you're saying?
Exactly.
Okay. Well, couldn't we stamp down overpopulation with the obliteration of abortion by saying people will now be more responsible with who it is?
No. You ever see the news stories where there's some guy and he has, you know, he has five babies from three different baby mamas or 15 different babies from all these women? You're dealing with a section of the population that doesn't care about abortion at all. They just have a shitload of kids because they're not paying for them anyway.
There you go.
And you know what? I can't believe I'm agreeing.
You can't believe you're agreeing with Mike?
I can't believe I'm agreeing with Mike. Although, you know, from his first statement, I have
I have an issue with the first sentence, but the rest of it, I totally agree with. Right?
Mark this down as a day in history.
Huh?
This is a day in history.
No. I haven't, but I still disagree with your first sentence because the way you put it, you know, in the hoods and all that, it's just black people having kids all over the place. It ain't just
I also James said the Barrio and Walmart. Come on now.
Yes,
I covered everybody.
James, for the words to come out of your mouth to say, I agree with Mike, that is a historic.
That's a watershed moment right there.
Yeah,
there's hope for the Middle East.
I think we should discourage black trash, white trash, and Mexicans from having babies.
Thank you. Now, see, as long as you say that, cool.
Which is why I said Walmart and the Barrio.
Yeah, he said hood, Walmart, and the Barrio. He included all.
Until I mentioned something, he didn't mention Trailer Park.
Well, no, that's Walmart.
The Barrio,
which is, you know, people of color. And
no,
Walmart.
We can say beers. It's okay.
Walmart is
fat white trash.
Walmart is the American melting pot.
I see a lot of fat, multiple baby having a white trash at Walmart, pal.
Yeah, well, you can find everybody there. So whatever your persuasion is, you can find it at Walmart.
No,
it's only 24 hours.
Definitely the Trailer Park's Macy's.
I wonder if we can
make Mike
chili flavored 480s RU 486 for the Mexicans to take.
I was thinking the same thing, Mike. And they should make Skittle flavored RU 486.
You guys are a mess. Okay, wait a minute. So the argument is, okay, Mike, I understand where it is that you're coming from because you believe that there is a class of people in this country, no matter what color, there is a class in this country that have used their children as means of benefits or, you know, some sort of dole. I appreciate exactly where it is that you're coming from, but if welfare rolls were changed, because then you got to go in elsewhere. Then you got to say, let's stop paying people to have children. That's a definite. We've got to stop making it beneficial for people to have children in the essence of government roles. You know, we have to get rid of that. That's probably not going to happen within the near future. What makes it a stronger argument for me is, I believe that there are more young people, girls who are between 16 and 25, who will look at, if abortion is no more, who will look at their bodies or look at their actions sexually in a different way. I believe that these girls will decide, in this case, it's like, look, if I get pregnant, I got to keep it, so I have to watch what it is that I do.
Yeah, but what's the illegitimacy rate?
74% right now.
So I don't really think getting pregnant is a concern for people.
Because there's a
and
safety.
I want to get back to I want to digress a little bit because I want to get back to what we had sort of touched upon, or me and Mary had touched upon before the break.
Right.
Everybody talks about responsibility. Now, I know it's sort of a hot button to say that women are more responsible for their bodies than men are.
Sure.
Listen, the bottom line with that, James, this is the bottom line. As a woman, you should be responsible for your body. As a man, you should be responsible for your body. But if I choose to give my body to a man that isn't as responsible as I am, that's my responsibility, okay?
And that's what I'm
saying. And wait a minute.
But you won't find many women who will agree with that.
Let me finish. So, therefore, it is still my – just because you're slacking doesn't give me a pass to slack, okay? Because I'm the one that's got to deal with it. I'm the one that's got to carry it. I'm the one that's got to give birth to it. I'm the one that's got to drag the little crumb snatcher around in a damn car seat and shit.
Yeah, but again,
you know,
all right.
I mean, I'm the one that's got to deal with
it.
You ain't got to deal with it.
But again, you're the guys. You're the gender that has to deal with all that. But you're also the gender that says yes or no.
Unless
it's a case of rape, there's not a man who is not looking for cues from you. All right, it's not a man that's gonna say. I mean, we don't want to stop the mood, but if you say, look, do you have something? All right, it's up to you to say, okay, even if you're willing to put the responsibility back on him, you're going to have to be the first person to say stop, let's think. Because the man
James, hold on a second.
I don't know where it is that you're going with this, but I'm gonna tell you this. As a woman, I learned a very long time ago to be safe, okay? A very long time ago. I carry condoms in my purse, okay? So,
Let me ask you a question. Have you ever been with a man, all right, where you said, okay, if he didn't have it on his own, and you say you carry your own in your purse, right? Have you ever been with a man and you told him, wait, put this on, he didn't do it?
Indeed, I was. I've been with a few. And you know what I said? You know what I said?
And you still let him?
Wait, James, you know what I said? You are not putting on your raincoat. You're not dancing in my rainforest, boo.
All right, then. So, once again. All right, but so that was the question I asked.
Been drunk out of my mind and done it. I've been sober and done it. I don't play around when it comes to that. Not only am I not trying to get pregnant, I'm not trying to die, my man. I'm not trying to die. Forget about getting pregnant.
And how many men tried to force you anyway?
When you told them to get out of your bed,
how many didn't?
Hey, James.
I can remember this one person in particular that I was with that tried to act a little funny. I don't pull no punches.
Right.
And if he wasn't rolling out, I was beating his ass.
All right then. Now,
but James, I want to ask you a question. Okay. I understand you're saying that. Look, we're talking about responsibility and all of that
Not even just responsibility. We're talking about power in and of itself. All right. Well, the women have the power. You have what we want. We are going to do what you want us to do if we actually want to get in you.
You're skirting on date rape here.
Yeah, I don't know what it is.
Not even date. Well, all right, okay. Which leads me back to the other point, which I can't understand. You, Mr. Hopkins, are confused about the term legitimate.
No. I'm not confused by it. I know exactly what they're picking apart here. I'm not confused by it. The whole argument that I'm making here about Todd Akin is that they're literally taking what he said and using the word legitimate as him making a distinction about what kinds of rapes there are, which of course is ridiculous.
Well, wait a minute. Hold on. Before you finish that, there is a distinction between the terms because as you said a while ago, and you and your numbers and your facts, what were you saying? You were talking about somebody who had a lawyer who had looked at how many accusations of rape have actually been legitimate.
Right. Well,
how much was it?
No, James. Let me jump in real quick. I think what you're missing is
once that term is attached, period, no matter whether it's legitimate, forced, or incest, once that term is attached, period, all hell is going to break loose on the individual who's being accused.
Exactly.
But I understand what you're saying is that by women holding the power.
Not even just the accused. I think it's more that a stigmata is attached to the accuser. Even
no,
if,
but James, until there's a distinction in the law, until there's a distinction in the law, it is what it is. Those four, it's that simple, basic.
It is what it is. Right, you're right. It is what it is. But again, there are still women out there who just use it as a way of attaining power.
Which is all of our reason that if she says no,
and it happens more often than you think.
James. All of our reason that if she says no or you got to suit up, then that kind of puts the ball in the guy's court. Because he has to think, if I go ahead and go ahead and try to get this regardless, there's a chance I may get jammed up.
Okay. All right. Listen to what you just said, though. Hold on, let me answer his question. Listen to what you just said. If the woman says no, and you still try to get it, then it is legitimate rape. But if the woman never said no, let me finish, please.
Don't you guys have any skill in negotiation?
James, hold on. What the hell did you just say, Mike?
Jesus, don't you know how to negotiate for a blowjob instead? If you don't have a condom and she won't let you in her, she will more than likely give you a mouth hug and you're not going to have a mouth baby. I've never turned down a blowjob.
No, you're not going to turn down a blowjob. But what happens
and
more?
You're not going to leave disappointed.
The woman will give you that blowjob and then the next morning she feels remorse. Or somebody finds out that the ones are supposed to, and the first thing she says is, what?
Yeah.
Well, if she brushed her teeth, there's going to be no DNA, so there you go.
There'd be no DNA, whatever. But nowadays, all she has to do is say it happened.
Right.
And your life is messed up from there.
James, hold on for a second. James, I get where you're going. But we've also got to understand, James, and again, in a roundabout way, I get your point.
How would
you
run out?
You know,
in a roundabout
James,
way, I get
you
your
know,
point.
Let me interrupt real quick.
Sure.
James, you just took the long, roundabout scenic route to where we were trying to get to begin with.
Right.
Well, yeah, because I kept you. I can't be stopped. All I'm saying is, let's do more investigation. Let's find out if it's actually true. Let's find out if it's a legitimate claim. Because
well, okay, fair enough. But you know what, James? You know what? I agree with you there. In using, that's why I said, again, they're picking apart his words. But you're saying in cases of legitimate rape, and his argument, or anyone else's argument for that matter, should be, you know, when someone accuses another person of rape, it should be dealt with as an investigation until it's proven to be legitimate. That's a fair argument, right?
Yes.
Okay. No. And again, people who talk about this issue believe that if a woman claims that she's been raped, it's 100% true.
It's 100% true. And how many times has that actually happened nowadays? How many times does it actually happen nowadays?
Well, nowadays,
everybody's looking for the book deal. Everybody's looking for the Lifetime movie. It doesn't, you know, the truth doesn't matter anymore. It's the claim, and that's it.
Okay, but James.
Well,
tell me that's not true.
Until there's change in legislation, it's going to continue to go down this way.
No,
and you're still going to find people who say, okay, then fine. If that's the case, then legitimize it. But if you're going to apologize for using that word, it's like you're cashing in with everybody else. If a woman says it's rape, period.
Right. You're right,
period.
Exactly.
Whether it's true or not.
Even President President Obama said today that the words that Todd Akin used were unfortunate, and went so far to say, you know, rape is rape, which again just forges the argument, as far as I'm concerned, forges the argument that no one would ever lie about that claim. So if the person screams rape,
no woman lies about rape, and it's been proven wrong. But people still say the same thing.
Do you know what stops this problem from ever happening?
Go for it.
Hookers. Just get a pro. Jesus. So much simpler to get a pro and spend your $300 and not have to worry about this nonsense and take out some girl and pay her for dinner and worry you get laid and she's going to turn you into the rapist.
Yep. $300, Mike.
Just use Backpage. Backpage.com is the way to go.
Hey, Reese.
Yeah,
I want to say something real quick. You know, I agree with Mike saying, you know, about the, let's say, just say BJ.
Yeah.
Because we've talked about this in the black community. Let me see if this works right here. We've talked about this before. That's what you do.
I can't even respond to that effort. We'll take a break on that note. We'll be back. It's Reese on the Radio.
Says they're gonna put y'all back in chains, and when he gets called out for it, we Republicans get accused of taking what he said out of context. It's always us taking y'all out of context. It's always you're so misunderstood, and y'all are getting more indignant by the day as we Republicans expose you for how cynical, hateful, greedy, covetous, racist, and just straight up nuttier than a jar of Skippy you Democrats actually are.
I think what's happening.
Propaganda.
Glaring examples I like to point to about how Democrats are always making excuses is Bill Clinton at Robert Byrd's memorial. Bill Clinton tries to make light of Democrat Senator Robert Byrd being in the KKK and tries to sell us on overlooking the racist position he ran on by saying, give him a break, he was just trying to get elected. You're exactly right, Bill. That was key for Democrats. And a big reason why they got elected was because they were trusted to represent the racist sentiments of their constituency. This is at the core of the Democrat Party. People didn't vote for Republicans for this. They voted Democrat. But the Republican Party is the party of racists. Based on what? Barry Goldwater? Lee Atwater? Strom Thurmond? Did I miss anybody? I'm sure you liberals got a few cherry-picked figures for your talking points. But while you try to recite these names, keep in mind the words of your Democrat darling, Bill Clinton. Robert Byrd was just trying to get elected. That's pretty much the way it was for Democrats, period. The hotbeds of bigotry in America are commonly recognized as the southern states, right? And keep in mind, the people are going to vote for those who represent their racist values. And we've already agreed that the southern states have been the hottest for bigotry, right? Well, that list of so-called racist Republicans that liberals try to bring up is as insignificant as the last sheet of tissue on a toilet paper roll after Michael Moore binges on buffalo wings. Let's look at these racist states, shall we? Texas. Oh, yeah. Whole lot of racist rednecks down there. And, of course, they're going to want people in office who represent their white supremacist culture, right? That's why out of 47 governors, 38 of them have been Democrats and only 7 have been Republican. Oh, but years of Democrat racist representation is nothing compared to the strategies of Bush Sr.'s campaign manager Lee Atwater. But hold on, that's just one of those ultra-racist states. Alabama had 53 governors. 42 have been Democrats. Only 6 chosen by the people of that state were Republican. But you want to hold Republicans responsible for racism. Okay. The racist Democrat representation continues with Mississippi. Ooh-wee! That's a barroom hoedown of bigotry right there. They've had 64 governors in that state. 52 have been Democrats, and only 6 have been Republicans. Yeah, but Strom Thurmond, shut up. What about Democrat segregationist Lester Maddox? And for every so-called racist Republican you liberals try to point to, there's like 10 Democrat actual racists. But y'all still really want to believe that racism is the fault of Republicans that badly, huh? Despite these figures? Okay, let's continue. And I'm not even talking about congressmen and senators and mayors and such. That would take too long. But yes, the majority of them were Democrats too. Georgia has had 82 governors. 47 were Democrats. Only 4 were Republicans. Louisiana, a lot of racism there. 53 governors. 30 were Democrats. 11 have been Republicans. Arkansas, 45 governors. 8 Republicans. The rest were Democrats. Tennessee, 58 governors. 10 Republicans. 34 of them were Democrats. South Carolina, 116 governors. 8 of them Republicans, 90 of them were Democrats. Do I really need to go through all these states where racism was the hottest? I thought you were Democrats. Isn't it the majority rules in your party? Well, the majority of your party's history is racist, yet because of minority instances of arguable racism in the Republican Party, the minority ruling is that the Republicans are racist? See how contradictory y'all are? Are you understanding that the racist population of these states that are commonly known as the most racist states of the United States elected people who represented their racist values, and the people representing their racist values were Democrats? You can't lay the blame on Republicans when it was Democrats controlling these states. The Democrat Party platform is rooted in racism. Have you ever read the original Democrat Party platform? The original included language to protect their so-called right to force people into slavery. But Republicans are the racist because the original Republican Party platform was to abolish slavery? And when liberals are reminded of this, they always say the same thing. Yeah, well, you know what, Zoe? That was a long time ago, and you need to get over it. Really? Okay, well, you know what? Slavery itself was a long time ago. Why don't y'all get over that? Marinate on that a bit while we pick this up on the next donation. Straight up nuttier than a jar of Skippy.
On the radio, we're back 38 minutes after the hour. It's August the 20th, 2012. For those of you who don't own a calendar, whatever. It's what you do. I'm so used to that thing. I've done it for a long time. You always give the time. You always give the hour. You know, you always give the time. You always give the date. It's kind of a stupid stamp that we do, but it's just the lingo. So to anybody who asks, why did he do that? That's why. You know, you're lucky I don't give the weather. They got people all over the world. Anyway, so, hey, by the way, update that just came out on Drudge Report says that Tony Scott, director Tony Scott, who we talked about at the opening of the show, his wife has told police he did not have brain cancer. They say Tony Scott's widow, Donna, has told police that the famed filmmaker, TV producer, did not have brain cancer, informed insiders. Tell Deadline.com. That makes erroneous this morning's Good Morning America report. Oh, wow. Good Morning America reported that, did they? That he had inoperable brain cancer and quoted a source close to him. Ooh. ABC News, you guys are looking stupid, as usual. What is this saying? It says, this is the second time in a month that ABC News has erroneously reported on a sensitive news story, and you all know about the Tea Party debacle that Brian Ross had tried to report on. But according to his widow, he did not have inoperable brain cancer, which, of course, brings this whole story to another level. Anyway, I need to get into this because, unfortunately, we have not had a talk with the folks over at the Real Talk Blancers, so we are stuck with liberal, Obama-loving James Montgomery. I would love the Real Talk Blancers to be on sometime this week. We'll see if we can get them on, because I know how much you love their rhetoric and how insane they sound. Newsweek.
Just found an answer from them.
What was that?
I spoke to them over the weekend. We're just waiting on an answer. I emailed them over the weekend, I should say.
Oh, you did? You emailed them over the weekend? Okay.
Yeah.
All right, we'll see what they got. Anyway, okay, so what's happened over the weekend in the Obama campaign? Well, aside from the fact that an e-book by Politico has just come out talking about the infighting inside the Obama campaign, Newsweek magazine, or as I like to call them, Dollar Week, because that's what they sold for, Dollar Week magazine, who called President Obama the first gay president and showed him with a rainbow halo, said that Obama critics are dumb. That was on the cover. Called Mitt Romney a wimp. The wimp factor was the head of it. All of a sudden, they decided to get a conservative columnist to do the lead story. And their lead story, their cover story is, "Hit the Road, Barack, Why We Need a New President." And the rest of the media has gone nuts. The New York Times has gone nuts. How dare Newsweek write a story unfavorable of the President of the United States? And then after 8 weeks of not doing a press conference, this poor man was forced to come out and surprise reporters so you can catch them off guard, so you can answer some questions about old news stories that have gone away. We don't even talk about Joe Sopcich anymore, but they're still asking him. And so what did the President of the United States do by making this ill-conceived appearance at a press conference? I'll tell you. Think about this, folks. Hear me out. President Barack Obama has stayed out of the fray with the Joe Sopcich story. With the, what's her name? Stephanie Cutter. Debacle. The lies here and there. The felony claims of Mitt Romney, saying that he was a possible felon because he lied in FEC forms. These stories were weeks. Oh, when was Justin here?
Last month.
Justin was here a month ago. I think it was days into Justin's visit that we heard the story that Stephanie Cutter was calling Mitt Romney a possible felon. Here it is a month later. The president shows up at a press conference, surprises people, and they're asking him stories that have already gone through the news cycle. So the question I asked was whether or not him showing up helped him or hurt him. The answer is, it hurt him. Here's why. And I know that everyone has got to agree with me on this. The stories were over. He had stayed out of the fray. He had stayed out of the public eye. He went out there and he campaigned and he waved his hands and he shook hands and kissed babies and ate hot dogs. He wasn't meeting with the press. He wasn't talking about these subjects. And at this particular point, hey, you know the news cycle. It's here one day, it's gone the next. And because they're saying, hey, where's he been? Where's he been? Where's he been? Where's he been? Finally, he shows up and they bring up old news and he responds to news that had already cleared the cycle. So now it's news again. And what was the news about? Negative stuff against the President of the United States. Therefore, just burning that Bunsen burner under the beaker. Once more. And all of this after he does a radio interview in New Mexico. Folks, I kid you not if you have not heard this interview. Okay? He went on a morning zoo program. And he answered questions like, what's your favorite chili? Is your tour bus comfortable? Who do you like in the World Series? Do you wear boxers? No, I'm kidding. They didn't ask that. They were asking the most ridiculous questions. And then he goes on Entertainment Tonight with Nancy O'Dell. And is asked questions about a bromance with George Clooney. Stephanie Cutter is heard on the weekend talk show saying that Entertainment Tonight and the Morning Zoo in New Mexico is just as legitimate as the other news press. Folks, I've never seen failure like this. Never. The last time I saw failure this bad, it was my divorce. And trust me, that was abysmal. I haven't seen anything this awful. So first I'll bring in our resident liberal, lover of the Obama campaign. He can do no wrong. He can do no wrong. That's right. He's got Barack Obama's back. Oh, you know he does, damn it. He's got Barack Obama's back. Yes, he does. And I'd just like to hear where he stands on these debacles from his favorite son. We'll bring him in, and as soon as my computer stops playing with me, I can get him in here. Sorry about that, James. I just wanted to make... Oh, this is ridiculous. I'm having such a hard time. James.
You.
So, with all the debacles, do I have a point here? Aren't they just rehashing old news?
Well, don't they always rehash old news?
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, the point was... Yeah, of course they rehash old news because he's been avoiding it for 8 weeks. The bottom line is that he has...
You know what? Again, there are things the man decides to talk about and there are things he doesn't, all right? It's up to the questioners to bring it up or not, all right? The fact that they still bring up whether he's an American or not, that's still old news. It was old news before he became president. They're still bringing it up.
Who said he wasn't American?
Who said he wasn't American? He said he wasn't American enough to be the American president.
Wait. What news outlet that he's been avoiding for 8 weeks ever said that he wasn't American? All of them? What news organization ever reported that Barack Obama may not be American? What news organization? Okay. CNN?
Anyone who's reported on the fact that, let's see, Drudge Report, Huffington Post, they always bring up a story about his birth certificate, right? Whether he's legitimate enough to be the American president, right?
Okay. No, not right.
No? Oh, wow. Okay.
Okay,
whether he's from Kenya or not.
An individual.
Hell,
like,
even you. What media? Well, not even news, but what media? You too.
Oh, no,
whether
no. I'm
Kenya
I'm guilty.
Or not.
I'm guilty. I'm 100% guilty. I don't think he was born.
Thank you.
Here.
All right, next. Next.
I'll be the first to say it.
And then after that, now they're trying to figure out, you know, whether his school reports, they're always bringing up old news. Everybody's bringing up old news.
But, James, hold on.
The fact of the matter is the man knows when.
James?
What?
James, let me ask you
this. Yeah.
If the president of the United States is asking that Mitt Romney release 12 years of his tax returns, it's not legitimate to ask for transcripts that have been purposefully held from the public
purposefully.
And I say purposely, listen to me, I'm not mincing words here. Purposefully, he used lawyers to keep his college records from public view. These are his lawyers. $4 million worth. So again, I ask you. If you're paying,
again,
now Mitt Romney's not paying anybody.
Why is it that everyone else can ask for his records, but he can't? He's only doing what everybody else has done to him. He's using y'all against yourselves, and now you have a problem.
Hold on. Romney has disclosed 2 years.
Wait. Fair enough, or do you have to ask the question again?
You're going to have to start using the Derek button on him.
Yeah, it means I don't understand.
Okay,
but
let me
fair enough. Has it been done to him?
I'm saying fair enough. Ask that question, so I'm going to give it fair play by asking this. Mitt Romney is releasing 2 years of his tax returns required by law. Okay?
Right.
All right. Well, every person has asked for the president, the current sitting president's college transcripts, and they are being held at bay by lawyers.
Okay. Again, the current sitting president. The fact of the matter is, he's already the president. This question should no longer be asked. And they're still asking.
Why should it no longer be asked?
Mitt Romney gives a token gesture. Gives a token gesture.
Answer the question.
He's releasing what he has to by law.
Yeah, he's requiring.
We saw George Bush's college record. We haven't seen
Obama. Barack Obama has
released his college transcript.
But they keep asking him for years.
I'm using the Derek button now. James, hold on. I understand you have a strong argument, but you got to do a back and forth. Make a brief.
Where is the line drawn? Why is it that this, our American president right now, our sitting American president, has to do more than anybody else?
Whoa, James. Wait.
No, has to do what everybody else has done.
That's all we're asking. If everyone else has released their... What about John Kerry?
We saw Bush's college transcript. That's how they called him as president.
James, I'm putting you on hold. You got to listen. John Kerry, John Kerry, right? We know that John Kerry had poorer grades than George W. Bush. George W. Bush had better grades than John Kerry. Why do we know that? It's because no one has ever held up his college records. No one's ever held them up, okay? Every president that we know how smart they are. We know what schools they went to. We know what class they took. I mean, for Christ's sakes, we know that George W. Bush was a cheerleader.
We don't even know why Obama gave up his law license.
Yeah, I mean,
Wait a minute. Come on, man.
He voluntarily surrendered his law license.
If you're going to be a politician, you cannot be a politician and a lawyer. You can't
maintain your law license.
And still,
you're wrong.
Now, James, you're gone off the deep.
Yeah, you're absolutely wrong.
James, you're forgetting. Hillary and Bill Clinton, both lawyers. Bill Clinton, during the Lewinsky scandal, because he lied under oath, ended up losing his law license until 2005. Okay? He was still a lawyer. Hillary Clinton, still a lawyer. In fact, a large number of sitting representatives and congressmen are lawyers
You just have to pay your renewal fee to the Bar Association, unless something shady.
Yeah,
like,
I'll give James
interview, say, have you ever used another name, Mr. Obama? And you say, no, I've never used another name besides Barack Obama.
Listen, I'll give James the benefit of the doubt, and he's thinking that means that you cannot take on clients, that a president doesn't take on clients. But as being a lawyer, damn near every politician in Congress and president is a damn lawyer.
Okay, yeah. All right. All right, then I will admit I may be a little uninformed on that fact. All right, I'll admit that. But I will also say that whether he gave up his, you know what, the thing is, there is the ideology that you can't serve two masters.
No, but he's not serving anything. Nobody gives up their law license when all it takes to keep it is to pay a renewal fee. Unless you've done something shady, you're avoiding.
But
wait a minute. So the fact that he gave up his law license is called into question. Why?
Absolutely, because nobody does that.
Nobody does that, but he did.
Oh,
but
he does that. And he and his wife both did it. And his wife gave it up before he even ran for office.
And, James, you know what? If he wants to break the mold, then that's fine. But here's a great question. Here is a man who constantly, when chiding Mitt Romney, talks about transparency. This man said he was the most transparent. It was going to be the most transparent administration in White House history. The bottom line is that there's been, not been anyone who's been able to vet him on in any degree about his past, what he thought, his ideology, anything. No one has been able to see that. Again, the argument has always been made about Barack Obama that he came out of nowhere. And you know that can't be disputed. He came out of nowhere.
No, it cannot be. You're right.
Okay.
You're right about that.
He came out of nowhere. So when the argument comes up, it's like, look, where did this guy go to school? What did he learn under? What was his ideology? Who taught him this? Who taught him that? When those questions come up, they're constantly avoided by, by mainstream press. And and I'll go this far. When it was revealed that Barack Obama was indeed a member of a communist group, right? It was revealed. He's in their chapter. He's in their chapter as not only a donor, right, but as a member, right? The media wouldn't touch it. But he is in their roster as a member. When it was asked, they denied it, said it wasn't true. They found proof that he was. When we brought up on this show that his publicist had a bio that said Barack Obama, born in Kenya, raised in Indonesia and Hawaii, the publisher said that it was a grammatical error an error made by someone who wrote the bio, but then it was revealed that each and every author issues their own personal bio themselves. It's an autobiographical bio that they give to the publisher. No one touched it. Now, if here is a president of the United States who once said in a bio about a book that he wrote that he is born in Kenya, raised in Indonesia and Hawaii, why is that not an issue to ask? You need to release a little more, because this is suspect.
I'm not saying that the question shouldn't be asked, all right? But the question has been asked.
No, nobody asked him the question.
Wait a minute.
Obviously,
headlines
on Ohio is not the same as he's
obviously
not getting questioned
people have
by
asked
the mainstream media.
It keeps coming up.
But nobody asked him directly.
Wait.
Nobody asked him anything.
Yeah, James, you
anything
have to
enough to disclaim the man. He became
Barack Obama. Wait, James. Who's asked Barack Obama personally about those issues I just raised? Who's asked him? No. They've asked the question indirectly. They can ask the question publicly.
Oh, indirectly. Indirectly. That gives a lot of credence. All right? They've asked indirectly. They've never really asked this man. They've allowed everybody else to talk. And the man can – so actually you can say the man doesn't need to speak because everybody else is speaking for him.
Well, no one.
No, but he's not addressing the question.
Yeah, he's not addressing the question when it
comes
to...
Why should I? I know the truth. You're still trying to figure it out.
Because he works for us.
James, that's, again, a bigger question. It's not about Barack. It's about the country. And if he's serving the country as president of the United States, we have a right to those answers, James. You have to consider this. See, the scariest part about this is that more people are concerned about more concerned with protecting him, his ego, and his personality instead of dealing with the fact. Remember, if this were Bush, if this were Reagan, even if this were Clinton, the argument would be: look, you serve us. This isn't about you. And if we find out something about you that is questionable, you have to answer to the American people. Those things. This isn't about protecting you and your image, but more people who protect Barack Obama are doing just that, protecting Barack Obama and saying the hell with the fact that he's supposed to do for us as opposed to we doing for him.
Wrong.
More people carrying water for an American.
The fact of the matter is, even with all these questions, okay, even with all these questions and the way the presidential political
medical process has been and is now. All right. Fact of the matter is, if you couldn't find out before, after he's president, he's president now.
Well, James,
because the mainstream media didn't question him, dude.
I'm so glad he mentioned that. James, do you remember why Dan Rather got fired from CBS? If you don't, I'll enlighten you. In 2004, a sitting president was vetted by CBS and Dan Rather and his producers that he avoided going to war based on documents that CBS claimed that they obtained that proved that he got preferential treatment to keep him from war. This was a news organization asking the question about George W. Bush's military service based on rumors and innuendo. They went full throttle on CBS 2, did a full report on it until it was exposed to be a fake. Dan Rather and his producers were fired for it. And they asked the question. So, if they can do that to a sitting president and it be George W. Bush, why not do it with this sitting president if, indeed,
First and foremost, you did it to a sitting president, which already raised the red flags anyway. And then,
I'm surprised he's not chased.
Mike, I didn't hear that.
He's riding Obama's dick so hard, I'm surprised Obama's not chafed.
Wow. Really? Because it seems
you
like,
are ball-washing him, my friend. Like I said, he could get caught with a live girl or a dead boy, and you wouldn't care.
Wow. Okay.
I'm to agree, man.
I'm going to call you an Obamianist, okay? You worship this man.
You're still riding the dick of a man who can't even remember he was president.
We'll end it on that. I'll let you get the last word on that. I'll let you get that. I'm going to end it there. Thank you guys as usual. That's our show for tonight, folks. On